All right, and welcome back to another episode of Self-Directed Podcast. Today, we got an awesome guest, Taylor Foreman, who is a Praxis alumni and now doing so many cool things in his career, has an awesome story, and we're going to get to more of that, so I don't want to spoil it. Taylor, welcome to Self-Directed.
Thank you so much. Really happy to be here.
Awesome. Glad you're here. It's always good to catch up. And, you know, before we were flipping record on, we'll do our best to not stray down too many rabbit trolls because we're both prone to talking big ideas. So I want to give you time to talk about the big ideas, but also get into some of the tactical step-by-step things you took in different phases of your career that I think a lot of people out there who are early in their careers, self-described creatives, and people who are trying to figure it out could take a lot of lessons from. So let's just start off. I'd love to hear it. You know, what is your occupation now? How would you describe that for listeners?
I'm a writer. I remember years ago, I said to somebody asked me what I did, and I realized, man, if I could answer writer to that question, that would make me feel awesome. So I'm a writer. I have different projects sort of surrounding that, and I write fiction and I write philosophy. I write essays and TV. And I think it's all deep. It's all related. So yeah, writer.
That's awesome. How long have you been a writer where you feel like you could describe yourself as a writer with confidence versus more of like, I think I'm a writer, but you know, how long would you feel like you've been in this occupation full time?
A year. I have been writing. I started by writing my first novel in college. So years ago, and I've been seriously focused on it for a long time. And it's sort of an insane profession to try to do. But I would say, yeah, I like the practicality of the question. And I would say, I would put it like around a year ago that I would label myself that way.
That's awesome. I know it took a lot of guts to do that, let alone all the hours of hard work and forcing yourself like to develop discipline to get to the point where you can go all in and actually give that title out. I'm a writer, but do it in a way where you're like, I feel good about saying that versus like, am I truly, which is like such a creative person's, I think, continuous struggle. And let's get to all this in just a little bit, but I want to rewind the clock a little bit. What were you doing before you were a writer?
Well, I studied philosophy in college. So I did some writing back then, and I was going to go get my master's in philosophy, but I joined Praxis instead because I wanted to learn how to interact with the world in a real way and make money. And I liked that Praxis had sort of an education, like a kind of broader education or practical philosophical approach to the world. It's like that Stoic philosophy, like how do we use this? Yeah. And I like that because I slowly discovered in college that I wasn't interested in any philosophy that wasn't useful.
Yeah.
And I realized that I love philosophy, but I needed to be useful in order to feel like a complete man, a complete human being.
Yeah.
So I joined Praxis and I was working at a startup in Austin, Texas, good company, worked my way up, was like doing really well. Like a lot of praise going to, you know, from my bosses to your bosses at the time. and that was fine for a while, but I've always been a hard worker. I would wake up in the morning and work all day and then I would write all night. And so I was like, I've always been really trying to develop myself and and create opportunities. But it's challenging when you're trying to do too many things at once. And that was something that it's an interesting thing because, and I'll try not to get too philosophical. I feel myself going that way. But let's see, let's go back to the story. So, let's see. So I was working for the startup, writing my book at the same time. And I eventually left that job, kind of went through like a darker period where I was doing comedy and sort of letting it all hang loose and writing. And but yep. I was really not structured at all. And then I moved to LA, worked for a different startup. And when my dad, I got a call from my dad one day that he got diagnosed with Parkinson's. And literally as soon as I hung up that phone call, I was like, my life is too short for me to be doing marketing. I had kind of moved my way up into marketing, and nothing wrong with marketing. I was doing it because I thought, oh, this is kind of like writing, and I can kind of I can make a living doing this. But it didn't line up with the core of who I am in a major way. And so I took the leap. I was doing like odd jobs for a while as I got my writing career developed, and like it really lit a fire under me. I put a website together. I started doing Upwork stuff and writing like insanely on on Medium and other platforms. And also I was doing comedy at the same time. So like that stuff was developing. I was making connections. And now it's insane. Cause like you don't get paid for any of that stuff as you're doing it, but it's like, now I have like, it's like online business card. Like I've built a presence online. People know that I can write. I can basically get clients on demand. Mm-hmm. So like I have a few, and if I, you know, and I kind of work my load as much as I want to and what brings the most meaning for me. And I'm constantly kind of saying no and cutting back here and there. I get to work on my creative projects. I have a TV show in development because of the contacts I've made from being out here.
That's
in LA,
awesome.
Working in comedy, which is like a dream come true. I can't believe that's happening. And I get this sense of like people reach out to me all the time and tell me how much I've helped them through my writing online. And it's only encouraged me to be more and more forthright and honest about what this life means and what I went through and the darkness I went through. And it's just sort of this outpouring of meaning. And I don't think it's about writing specifically. I think it's just, I've decided to live my life the way I want to live it. And I'm seeing it. I'm seeing like that the universe really responds to that in a really powerful way. It's very exciting. So yeah, that kind of brings us up to date. I reached out to you guys as that stuff started coming together. And I was like, hey guys, like the Praxis like gave me great tools. I didn't really know how to use them at first, but and I would love to share. So that's, you know, here we are.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. There's so much to unpack there. Different points I definitely want to dig into. My first response is like, you gave me chills a little bit. When it's like, I had this, there was this exact moment where I recognized it wasn't just like, this is my true North Star, but it was like something else, some external situation happened, you had no control over, bad situation. And it's like a wake up call. It's like instantly, I know I have to go do this. So let's talk about that moment a little bit. What was the timeline that happened immediately following that? You said you're working in marketing, you have this sort of epiphany. What was that like? Did you just quit and the next day you sat down and started banging out words online? Was there, you know, was there some kind of timeline where you had a more planned exit strategy, I guess, into going all in on writing?
I probably should have.
That's okay if you didn't. You've made it work.
Well, I made it work because there was not a cell in my body that wasn't committed to it. I think when things happen and it's no longer like, because I don't really recommend that people like quit their job or like, I think it, like if you have a good job and you want to be a writer, like start writing. Like I'm very practical about that, but something happened to me like on a different level where I was like, I couldn't ignore it because it was powerful. What happened was, is that I summed it up that I quit and I did, like I put in my 2 weeks, but how it really went down was that there was a lot of problems with the company I was working for, as there is with every company. And I realized that I wasn't being forthright about it, that I was afraid of losing my job on some level. So I wouldn't speak out when things were a little funky. And so I went in the office the next day and was just like, we would go into the meetings with our CEO and the CEO would be like, oh, this is going on, and like would say something that was really vague or philosophical, and I'd be like, none of us here know what you're talking about. Can you like clarify what that means? And like, I mean, of course, being totally respectful, I wasn't like burning bridges.
Yeah.
And when I realized that, I started speaking the truth like constantly, and it was really pissing everyone off.
Yeah.
Well, actually, like my CEO loved it.
Well, yeah. Yeah. You know, because if you're in an environment where everything is vague before, it's like, wow, somebody's suddenly pointing out things that we can now we can do something about it versus right. Everybody just kind of like being passive. So, but and I can see how that also makes peers uncomfortable.
Well, like it was such a fascinating and growing experience. I made a bunch of mistakes doing it.
Yeah. As we all do. Yeah.
But I had like coworkers reaching out to me being like, you got to come to this meeting like before you quit, because like we need you to say what's going on. And that was really rewarding to me, was to be like, people are afraid to say what's going on, and they were afraid to, you know, it was like, I could have been resentful because like they didn't stand up for me when I was doing it. But privately they would be like, can you come to this meeting? And that felt good. I really didn't feel any kind of bad way about that. A couple of people did get mad because it was like disrupting. I wasn't doing it perfectly, and you could pick holes in the way that I was doing it, of course. And it was kind of disrupting the way things were being done and the way things were being reported. But when I finally did quit, I got a call from my CEO, and he was like, just like, I'm so glad that we had you. And like, if you ever want to just get coffee, just like to talk, that's like, you know, it was just like good terms.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, 'cause I kind of went kamikaze.
But in a good way, it sounds like. It's like, I'm doing this not out of some like vendetta. It's out of like me now pursuing my true North Star.
Yes. Whatever. Yes. It's like deciding that I need to take responsibility for every way that my life is set up, mm-hmm. and that anything that I decide not to say is a lie, and that, you know, lies are, it's not like a holier than thou, like sort of declaration. It's like when you play out lies, like your life doesn't work out the way that you want. And so it's hard to tell the truth in the moment, but it's, you line yourself up with reality on your side. Mm. 'Cause like every time that you distort reality, it's like, you think that you're going to beat reality. You know, it's like, it causes ease in the moment, 'cause you don't have to deal with it right then and there. But in the long term, it's a disaster. And the difficult thing is like, lies can kind of build up. So like, there was kind of like these unsaid things at my company, and it kind of had built up. And when I started telling the truth, it was like, it comes out all at once, and that can be hard on people. Yeah. And so I learned a lot of lessons, and basically since that moment, I do daily inventory, and I like, I know that I lie, because everybody does, like on little ways, like omission and whatever, but I try so hard to not lie about anything. Yeah. And it's one of the more life-changing things that I've done.
That's a powerful way to think about it too, though, is I think often it can be tempting to be like, well, I'm not actively saying anything or doing anything that is dishonest, fundamentally dishonest. But flipping the script there, I think is a powerful way to look at it, where it's like, I am refusing to acknowledge this one part of my life, or this one part of, you know, my job, or whatever it is, whichever compartment of your life it's in, I'm refusing to acknowledge it the way that it really is. And the impact that is having on my world, my happiness, my ability to achieve my long-term goals, and acknowledging that your lack of ability to acknowledge that is a lie. It's, you're lying to yourself. You're not really doing, you know, everything you can in your power to live in your best interest if you're not acknowledging that. That's powerful. I don't think I've ever thought about it that way, but I love that.
Well, I'm glad. it has been a majorly life-changing thing. And it's the sort of like, I have a mentor out here that I met at the Groundlings, and she's been in Hollywood for a long time and had a lot of success. And I wouldn't have earned a relationship as a mentee or her as a mentor with me if it wasn't for like extreme kind of honesty because we had I opened up in a way that made me look bad, and I was just like I guess I can't really go into details, but I just kind of like was as forthcoming as I could be. Mm-hmm. And it made me look bad in the short term, but I earned a relationship that has continued to pay. I see more and more of that the more I implement it into my life. But it's not like sometimes you can't just start being honest with yourself overnight, because it can take you out. Like, it's just too much.
Well, there may just be too many lies to acknowledge all at once. It may even just be a time thing. Like, you got to start peeling back the layers.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I like what you said about basically it made me look bad, but this was like the realest I could be, and somebody responding positively to that, which takes, I think, just a level of vulnerability and maturity to one, be that self-aware and that comfortable in your own skin, whether it's good or bad. And two, like, I think usually our temptation is to hide anything that shines us in a bad light, thinking that's going to serve our best interest, especially in interactions with others, where sometimes that may not be the case. You may have missed that opportunity by lying. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like, there's a guy who is a public speaker. I forget the details, but he was starting to get dementia. And he went up to speak on stage and he forgot everything that he was going to say. And so he started to panic and everybody's looking at him. And he, with his head down, he just started saying, panic, despair, uncertainty. He just started saying what he was feeling. And then as the audience was drawn in by his vulnerability, he remembered what he needed to say.
Yeah.
And he kind of dove into his talk. So there is just speaking out what you are, even if you don't, you wish you were some other way.
Yeah.
is in life is really powerful.
Yeah. Well, it's acknowledging reality, even if it's ugly, it's acknowledging it. And that's such a pure force, or it's so powerful to do that, you know, especially if you start talking about creativity in general, like, we can go on a rabbit trail, but I don't want to get too off track in the story here. I want to go back to kind of that point. So you start speaking your truth, you leave the company. Now what? What happened and what was the timeline there?
Well, let's see. I guess that's coming up on, what's the timeline? A year and a half now? I know, it's COVID.
Yeah.
Year and a half now, and or maybe closer to 2 years, and I started doing just odd jobs. Like, I had some savings, so I was just kind of like buffering myself and kind of keeping myself busy as I started to dive into how do I discipline myself, and it's not as easy as like, you get up at this time. It's like, I'm motivated by, I don't want to lose my job.
Yeah.
To I'm motivated by, I want to share my gift with other people. I want to kind of bring light. And that's different. That's hard to make that switch. And so I think it just took time and it took a little bit of uncertainty, but it was seriously one of the more fun times in my life, where I just was kind of, my days were different and I didn't know when I was, what I was going to be doing and where I was going to go. And so I tried a bunch of different things. I was getting up at different times. I was like sleeping till noon sometimes. And the funny, I wrote an article recently where I was like, I quit my job because I had to wake up at 7 and now I wake up at 6. It's like, my experience was that I was disciplined to gain freedom when I worked a job that I didn't really care about. And now it's like my discipline is my freedom.
Yeah.
It's something that I deeply, deeply enjoy, because I wake up every day thinking about maybe the person that was like me a few years ago that was lost and needed encouragement that yes, it's trying to live a creative life is kind of insane and there's a lot of barriers, and but that despite all of that, it's possible, and that if you know if you have the right tools, because very few people make it, but very few people have the right tools. And so, and I think that if you truly want it, you can have it.
Yeah.
And you might go into it wanting it and find out that you truly don't want it, which like, great, great. But if I think if you think you want it, go, you might find out that you don't, but if you truly want it, you can 100%, you can have it. You can have whatever.
Yeah.
Like you might die.
but at least it's a noble death.
Yeah. I mean, anything can happen really. Yeah. Like it's nothing in life is certain, but you're rewarded for leaps of faith. So that was my experience, that I kind of didn't know where my money was going to come from, and I made it in whichever way that I could. And I felt supreme when I started, and the more I let go and the more I felt rewarded by what I was doing and being internally motivated, the more money just kind of came to me, and it was like nothing. And and that's the sort of magic that I still can't really wrap my head around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how the money seems to follow, which maybe seems counterintuitive, especially while you're in a salary job, wondering if you should take a leap, but it's funny how money seems to follow once you like go all in, and that's not the object anymore. That's or the hurdle that's keeping you from taking that leap. You said something very interesting a moment ago about discipline is your freedom.
Yeah.
What kind of measures were you taking during that time period? You know, pre I'm officially a writer, post left my job. What kind of measures were you taking on a daily basis to build the muscle of discipline? Above and beyond just like finding odd jobs, you know, what were you doing as a writer during that point in time too? Were you writing every day? How much, any other things that were important?
A lot of my friends are writers now as well. And I think I write more than any of them. So I only say that because, I don't know that you have to write as much as I do to be successful as a writer, but I write a lot. Like, there was a time whenever I first quit my job, I was writing an article. Actually, it was close to like two articles and a short story every day.
Wow.
And I would kind of batch that. I started like working on batching systems where I'd write a bunch one day and edit another day. And I was trying all sorts of different things. I can see my whiteboard, and I have six rules for days. And it's sort of something I've found through trial and error through the years that I've been working for myself. Right now, and they've changed over the months, but right now it's the six rules, and actually it's seven now, and I need to change it to seven, but six
rules. But they're my rules, I can change them.
Yeah. My rules are: I read daily, I write daily, I connect with someone admired, I get enough silence, and I complete roughly five tasks, and then I have my five tasks. These are sort of like things that aren't necessarily recurring.
Yeah.
And then back to the list: never miss 2 days in a row. That's an important one.
That's a big one. That's a good one.
And and actually my seventh one is I have resolve resentments, which is, and I have some names under there, which is I notice if I ever get mad at someone or I feel resentful, I write their name down, then I do something nice for them.
That's a good rule.
And that, because resentment is poison, toxic, horrible emotion. And the sort of unspoken rule to this that I've developed over the years is I have sort of like a 5 minute rule, which is I have to read every day, and I only have to read for 5 minutes, but I usually end up reading for a long time.
Yeah.
But I have to start. The starting is such a, there's so much momentum behind starting. And the same thing for writing. I notice that I write like up to 5,000 words a day. But I don't start going like, oh, got to write another 5,000. It's like, all you have to do is write a sentence. You just have to start. Yeah. And I have to do that every day, and I can't miss 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
So that sort of stuff was just developed trial and error, reading books, trying stuff, see what works for me, and mixing it with my lifestyle. And it took a long time for me to, well, you know what? I'm still finding it. And I the first iteration was messy, but it was still like working for me, you know, to some extent. So, it's fun. it's good to think about it that way too. It's like you're learning to manage yourself, not tyrannize yourself.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. Cause the flip side that tyrannizing yourself is, you know, setting goals that are unrealistic and then giving yourself a lot of grief every time you don't live up to those expectations. And I think that goes back to what you're talking about earlier is you're lying to yourself. If you're one, you're not setting realistic goals, but two, if you aren't designing a system that acknowledges you the way you are with all your faults and tendency to procrastinate and your weaknesses and all that, I mean, I feel like it's so relevant to people everywhere that are now working remotely. And many mm-hmm. who are self-managing for the first time to a degree. Yeah. It's like, you gotta be honest with yourself. If you get distracted, I don't know, by the laundry or the dishes or the television, like don't be in that room or go to a coffee shop or something if you can. Like,
yeah,
it's really cool that you, one, that you just got out there and started testing things, but two, it's like, I'm going to refine these rules so that they serve me, not so that I'm subjected to the rules per se, but so that, you know, I can accomplish what I want. So go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that I've learned to build into the rules, like the 5-minute rule, which is the sort of flexibility to have an off day and write and read for only 5 minutes. And I've had those. And the don't miss 2 days in a row is like the day where you like a horse kicked you in the head. Like you just can't do anything.
Yeah.
To allow for that. And just, you know, I it's a sort of like a bowling alley, like the bumpers come up. That's good.
Yeah. The bumpers are important. So along the same timeline, how long was it before you could fully support yourself financially just from writing, as opposed to like feeling this urgency to go do all these other odd jobs in addition to, you know, practicing your craft?
If I were to do it again, I could probably do it immediately. It's yeah. Like, it's just to how much meaning you get from it.
Yeah.
So like I hopped on Upwork and started putting together a profile and, well, you know, it was also based on because I had experience, because I had written things and I had stuff online. And so I had some credibility. But I got great clients in no time. And like I was writing for a podcast and I was really committed to it and it was my passion. So like I made that podcast was number 12 podcast in all of mental health.
Wow.
And it was like, I wrote it for this guy who's a therapist out in Utah. And I'm good at it because I've been smashing my head over it for a long time. Like, and yeah, I'm like, I could make money pretty easily. I just was slow. Like when I felt like I had a little bit of buffer, I would let go of that stuff and start focusing on like the high meaning return stuff. Yeah. And that's really what I'm on right now is like, I'm like off Upwork altogether. And it's like, I have coaching clients now where it's like people I'm trying to like, I'm not trying to prune their bushes. I'm trying to plant good seeds.
Yeah.
And I go like, I want to get to the root. I want to do the most impact for, you know, I want to have the most leverage.
Yeah.
In the world and I'm working my way down that way. But sometimes it comes up where I'm like, oh, I need to kind of get a client or two.
Yeah.
So there is also that stress element where it's the long-term versus the short-term. Like sometimes I get so focused on the long-term that I'm like, oh shit, I need to pay my bills.
Like, well, that can happen for sure. In any business where you're like dependent on, it's dependent on your own input. Like mm-hmm. it's tough to strike that balance.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be honest, sometimes the short-term stuff surprises me. Like I have a great relationship with that therapist. A couple other things, like one time I wrote bedtime stories for like a meditation app that would be read by, you know, great voice actors. And so it was like, I would just write these like long kind of rambling stories about like whales and stuff. And I got a lot of joy out of that actually.
That's awesome. So
it's little things like that, but, I don't know. I think another thing to note for writers out there specifically is that there's a lot of like, don't listen to people that are limiting and that are bleak. Like there's like, yeah. Oh, it's really hard to get started on Upwork. There's just so much like, oh, and you can only make this amount of money. And like, it's just like, people are just like, they're full of limitation. They're full of fear, and you can break through that really easily. If you find out that, you know, you have value, like find your value and line it up with the world. You can make as much as you want.
Yeah.
And money stops being a thing. Yeah. Cause it's really hard. I just want to acknowledge that sometimes when you're a writer and you're like, well, I want to make some money, and you go on Upwork and it's just kind of bleak and you're like, oh, you got to find your first client and blah, blah, blah. To acknowledge that kind of, yeah, it's a little bleak, but you don't have to listen to advice that makes you feel limited, because it's just not true. It's, you can chalk it up to that person is limited.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not as easy as, it's not like manifesting in the sense that like, oh, you can kind of totally control your external environment, because like, you can't even control your own thoughts like half the time, but you do have sort of this leverage over the world, and you can manifest things that other people really can't do because they limit themselves. It's a delicate balance, but I just would encourage writers to not get discouraged in that way.
I think it's funny though. There's a clear difference in mindset probably too though. You know, the person who's like, I'm going to be a writer, I need to make money, I'm going to go on Upwork or whatever, or I'm staring at the blank page on Medium and I know I need to produce something that's going to get views.
Yeah.
That's a different mindset and different motives that you're responding to, and probably altering the types of things you're thinking about writing or the types of projects you're seeking out, as opposed to I want to do something today that has a lot of meaning for me, or that I'm really going to enjoy. And so you're seeking out projects where it's not like, I'm not filtering by, you know, the price or whatever. It's a, I'm reading through these prompts and seeing what excites me most, or writing about the thing that is gnawing at me the most inside, even if I don't feel like that's a you know, an expensive topic that people are going to view. Like, it's so funny, the difference. And back to what we were talking about earlier, like I think that that's one, maybe the money is easier, follows easier that way. But more, it's like, it's remembering why you're doing what you're doing, which is like, if it's to make money, there's probably an easier formula than choosing to be a writer or choosing to like go out on your own and do something
there. Yes. Well, you'll find that's yeah. If you want to make money, which you don't like, I mean, maybe I'm sure there's people that are very different from me, but money is just sort of a facility for me to keep playing. And all I want to do is play. Like, I want to go surf in Venice, and I want to go to a spa in Desert Springs. I'm going this weekend. I'm excited.
That's awesome.
And I want to keep writing, and I want to tell stories, and I want to help other people tell their stories. And I find that stuff. And it's not like I'm just like, ooh, follow your passion. It's like, I found my passion. I created it. And it doesn't look like I expected it to. Like, it never does. It never does. I had one of the editors for the Writing Cooperative reach out to me and offered me a column, which I that's great. I'm so excited about that. It's a great publication. I love them. And I my column's going to be called The Creative Life Is Possible. It's same as my I guess business. And I have like a weekly thing and that sort of platform. And I couldn't have planned for that to happen, or like made her reach out to me and offer that to me. It's just, I put my heart and soul into the things that I write and the stories that I tell, and people notice over time.
Yeah.
They notice over time. And I forget, you know. And you know what, like a thing that writers maybe struggle with is staying practical. And you have to write from a place that's full of love, but also like, I like, one of my best performing articles is like 7 signals you should do everything it takes to become a writer. And I was like trying to find a title that would draw clicks, but my soul is in the article.
Yeah.
And I'm not above a list. Like that's, yeah. That's insane. Like I just want to reach people. I want to fill people with love. And like, yeah. And so as being as humble as possible is really useful in making sure that, writing isn't for you.
Man, you just tapped on a nerve though, for me too, though, because I think there's this tendency, you know, whatever it is you're trying to do, you want to be a marketer, you want to be a writer, whatever. If you have any kind of flair or moxie, that you see yourself through, I'm a creative. I am a creative. Even if I'm going to go do this other thing, I want my own brand and voice and personality to shine through anything that I do. And you start looking at the way the game's played, and the listicle is a great example. It's like, I'm not going to write listicles because that's just clickbait and that's low quality stuff. Well, it's like what you said earlier is acknowledging reality the way that it is. Well, if that's the way the game's played, and me choosing not to play the game that way means people aren't going to see my work, then what's the point? Like, I'm not going to actually have the impact. That's a small concession. You're not above reality.
Yeah. Well, I would also say I would challenge any writer out there who has that feeling, which I get. You have a writer's pride. Like,
yeah,
I'm not trying to squash that in you, but maybe you're not writing enough. Like I wrote an article called I Let My Brother Die, and it was about my brother and some very, very personal philosophical sort of article. But like the next day it was like that 10 things I learned from the Wim Hof method, you know, like you're allowed. And my best articles are somehow both of those worlds at the same time. Yeah. I sort of capture the way that articles are written, but I sort of accidentally reinvented a little bit. But you can't really do that on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know and it's also a Pareto distribution. Like, one of my articles like went viral and I don't know why.
Yeah.
And like whatever.
Well, it's not going to happen if you're not writing, but it's much more likely to happen eventually if you're writing every day.
Yeah. And it's like people, you get hung up on that. It's like, oh, this made like thousands of dollars. Like, how do I repeat that over and over again? It's like, you won't.
Just keep writing.
Like, yeah. But also it's like, there's no better way to spend your time than writing online. It's the way we're headed. It is a business card. I mean, like writing, I'm like getting a development deal on a TV pilot. It's like, you Google me and it's like, I'm not some stranger. Like, okay, this guy, he like, people know who he is. Like, if you ever Google somebody and it's just like nothing comes up, you kind of like, well, I don't know who that is.
Well, especially if somebody says I'm a writer, then you Google them and nothing comes up. It's like, well, what have you written? You know? And that'll kick you right in the pride.
If
somebody calls you on that and they're like, what have you written? And you don't have anything to show.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that I remember I struggled with it for a long time. So, and I always want to remind people out there, writers, that it's not an easy thing to get over yourself, because it's not safe to write online. I probably said this last time. It's not safe to write online. It's not safe to express yourself. You're going to get hurt over and over again. I was talking to my friend the other day and he was like, Taylor, I really, but this is me bragging, I guess. he was like, Taylor, I really admire that you keep I sent him my pilot, my new pilot.
Yeah.
And he was like, I really just admire that you keep putting things out there before you're ready and for people to see and criticize. And he was like, I keep trying to like emulate that. But I feel like you don't feel the fear. And I'm like, dude, no, I feel it. Like I got a note on an article the other day that said, we're going to pass on this one, Taylor. Just feels a little thin. And I was just like,
dagger to the heart.
like the rest of my day, I'm just kind of like ruined. Like I'm no less sensitive to it than when I started.
Yeah.
But I've just gotten braver. It's just like, I don't know. Like cold showers do not get less cold. I don't like it.
So how do you cope with that though? How do you cope with, you know, it's kind of a catch 22 as you create more work and you grow your reputation. There's this sort of sliding scale as your standard increases, your quality of work, your volume of work, there's, you know, your reputation grows. This is the kind of work this person puts out. How do you reconcile that on a daily basis with the fear of hitting publish?
You have to learn to associate yourself with that which can overcome rather than that what you are. So what that means is you associate, let's see, I'm trying to think practically. You don't say, I am this work. And yeah. It needs to be perfect. You say, I am a process that does this thing that I trust myself to do, which is overcoming, yeah. Which is I put out imperfect things and I trust myself to be sort of iterative. And I think that's like a heroic thing where it's like literally, literally heroic is like this ability to die and be reborn.
Yeah.
And that happens all the time, whether you like it or not. So you might as well kind of take control of the process and put things out there before you're ready, before they express fully who you are. And that's something that you get out. That's actually something that does get easier with volume, with time, is that you get used to the idea that each thing that you write doesn't have to express who you are.
Yeah.
It's just something that you wrote. It's just, my early articles, it was like, I was trying to tell you everything I knew at once.
that's how everybody starts though.
Yeah.
You know, it's word vomit.
And now it's like, it's much more like, let me tell you this one thing that I know. And it's, if you read it, you might say like, oh, this is overly simplistic. You're reducing the world too much or whatever that, you know, but, I've done the hard work of realizing that, I don't have to be, this article isn't me.
Yeah. Have you read much about Picasso?
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of this. I don't remember which book this is from, but there's a story about Picasso and there's this person, he buys some art, says Picasso on it. He writes Picasso or something about, you know, the authenticity or whatever. Picasso writes back, it's a fake. And then he buys another piece. He writes back. Picasso says it's a fake. And then finally this guy like finds Picasso, confronts him, and he's like, what's the deal? And he's like, they're all fakes. And it's it's because it's like, which is crazy. Like Picasso, the sheer volume of his work, it was something like several hundred thousand of pieces during the course of his lifetime. So he was creating, you know, maybe up to dozens of pieces of art per day, but he wasn't saying like, no, I didn't create that. But he's like, who I am now, I'm different than what, when I created that, like it's a process. I like what you said. It's a process. I am this process that's continually running, getting better over time. And you know what? I'm going to have some pieces that, they no longer reflect who I am or what I believe or my ideas or the perfect, encapsulation of that or whatever. But I also just kind of like the hilarious artists, like, disdain for his own former work.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And it's so funny. I know another anecdote about Picasso where some woman was like, draw me something on the street. And he drew, it took him like 30 seconds. And he was like $30,000. and she was like, that took you 30 seconds. And he was like, no, it took me 30 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's like you kind of, you sort of are the summation of your practice on that level, which is a good reason to practice.
Yeah, get as many reps in as possible, which brings me to another question I want to ask you. So I know you've been in the grind for a while now. You're working with a lot of younger writers. You know, maybe not in age, but at least in like their own kind of process of discovery as writers.
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest lessons now, either that you learn or the biggest pieces of advice that you feel like every young writer, every person at the start of their creative journey needs to know?
I love that question. I'd say just knowing a lot of writers who are starting and are afraid to publish.
Yep.
I would say read popular stuff. Like, get over this idea that you have to be clever. Mm-hmm. And, or get over this idea that, that clever means it looks clever. Because yeah. writing popular stuff is and making it look easy is the hard thing.
Yeah.
There's this story of this gymnast. There's like at the Olympics. Here we go. The Olympics, a gymnast, she walks out and she's like perfectly built for this sport. And she does a routine and it's like flawless. Like there's nothing wrong with it. 10 out of 10 or like 9.8. And the next girl comes out and she's a really hard worker, kind of an underdog, not exactly built for the sport. And she, after seeing the girl in front of her, it was like, well, she was perfect. And so what do I have to lose here? Mm-hmm. So she goes all out and she does her routine and she goes beyond what she ever did in practice.
Yep.
And you can tell in the audience, and I'm actually getting chills just thinking about this. You can tell in the audience that she is an instant away from disaster, that she could break a leg. She's like pushing every boundary and everybody's quiet. And she does her routine and it's a little sloppier, but it's just, it's like perfect in that mm-hmm. sort of pushing your human boundary sort of way. And as she sticks the landing, everyone stands up at the same time, 10,000 people, and screams.
Yep.
At what are, how did they all know how to do that? That's so amazing. That's so human. It's so amazing that they knew that, that every person in that audience saw something heroic and they knew it and they didn't even have to confer with each other. They just stood up at the same time. We know in our bones without having to think about it, when we see something heroic. And as a writer, your job isn't to be the best gymnast, the best writer. It's to push your boundaries in front of people. And you can be kind of a shitty writer, but if you do it, if you write in a way that brings people to tears because you're pushing everything, you're telling the truth as best you can, and yeah. you're pushing everything in you and you're finding your human limits, people can't help but respond to it.
Yep.
So practice is great. Getting better at the craft is great. There's nothing better to do with your time, but that's, you don't have to be a good writer.
Yeah.
And that's what I would tell my new writing students is like, first of all, get over your resentment for popular things. Stop being envious of people.
Yeah.
It's hard, but that's your first rule. And then when you do that, when you stop being envious of that first girl, when you stop saying like, I wish I was built like her, that's when you can find your human limits. Yeah. And you can, even though you weren't, maybe it's naturally talented other people, maybe you're a little bit older. I mean, like a lot of my clients are way older than me, but it doesn't matter.
Not in writer years.
Not in writer years. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe, I mean like, maybe they weren't going all out or maybe they were kind of hiding themselves while they were writing. I don't know. It doesn't, none of that stuff matters. All we want to see is something heroic. Like, and I mean that literally, not like cool or anything like that. Just like finding your limits and pushing them. And it's really amazing. And you just know it when you see it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a tough one. I think there's so many challenges as the young writer, the young creative, whatever, you know, even if it's not writing that's your thing. It's not about pushing your own boundaries. It's about being novel for the sake of novel, or, you know, on the other end of the extreme, it's like, I'm just trying to copy what's popular to kind of mimic.
Yeah.
For the sake of sounding profound or sounding, I mean, it's back to the novelty thing, sounding better than I am. So a lot of good advice there, I think, for the young creative person who's setting out. I want to wrap it up. This has been fun. There's a lot of useful things here, but I want to wrap it up with one kind of fun bonus question for you that I think might be a little bit challenging just to pick one. But, you know, if you had to pick one or you know, as few as you can dilute your list down to. If you had to pick one book or content piece or whatever it is that's had, you know, the biggest impact on you as a creative person, as a writer, as somebody who's built a discipline, you know, in your craft, what would it be? I'll link to that so every young creative listening to this can go buy that book or check out that episode or content piece.
Wow. Man, that is tough.
It is a tough one.
Okay. I'd say for me as a creative that it's understanding Jordan Peterson's work, which that might sound a little strange, but, and I'll, you know, if you want specifics, like 12 rules for life, I mean, is a great place to start. But if you happen to be a creative person, that is like that's a disposition. It's a personality trait, and it comes with pros and cons. And it typically means that you lean left, and that what you need is to develop your conscientiousness, meaning like your hardworking attitude, and you need to understand that people who tend to lean right have something really important to teach you. And in order to develop yourself and become a complete person, you have to find that balance. And you have to learn how to speak to people that have a different sort of personality disposition as you than you. And so for me, it was like learning all of that was a way for me to get over my resentment, which was the biggest thing holding me back. Was like, I thought that I was special in a way that was not being utilized by society. Mm-hmm. And that was the most toxic thing about me. And it's just, being creative is wonderful, but it comes at a price, and it means that you have sort of a duty to put yourself together and get a routine, you know, clean your room
and go make your bed
and make your bed. And that stuff changed my life more than anything. And it was something that I started to learn in Praxis and talking to, you know, I was in the university system for a while, and then Praxis was like sort of a less like a radical liberal place to put it mildly. And it was that sort of learning to bridge that gap for me. And then for me, like Jordan Peterson just theoretically put it together in a way that I could really understand. And so that changed my life. And so I think about like different stories and stuff that I might want to share, like The Matrix, like
also
like
great one.
Yeah. Waking up for the dream.
Yeah.
But I would say like if you're a creative person and you feel like the world is out to get you, you feel like you blame things outside of yourself.
Yeah.
I would say Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life is a great place to start, putting yourself together in a way that you can actually be useful and still be creative.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'll be sure to link to that book and then, you know, to your Medium page and several of your other articles that I love that we didn't discuss here. So Taylor, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Self-Directed.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
You bet. You bet. And all our listeners out there, we'll be back again soon. Thanks as always for listening.